The King of Beaver, and Beaver Lights from Mackinac and Lake Stories, 1899. The King of Beaver. Success was the word most used by the King of Beaver. Though he stood before his people as a prophet assuming to speak revelations, executive power breathed from him. He was a tall, golden-tinted man with a head like a dome, hair curling over his ears, and soft beard and mustache which did not conceal a mouth cut thin and straight. He had student hands, long and well-kept. It was not his dress, though that was careful as a girl's, which set him apart from farmers listening on the benches around him, but the keen light of his blue eyes, wherein shone the master. Emmeline thought she had never before seen such a man. He had an attraction which she felt loathsome, and the more so because it drew some part of her irresistibly to him. Her spirit was kin to his, and she resented that kinship, trying to lose herself among farmers' wives and daughters, who listened to their prophet stolidly, and were in no danger of being naturally selected by him. This moral terror Emmeline could not have expressed in words, and she hid it like a shame. She also resented the subservience of her kinspeople to one no greater than herself. Her stock had been masters of men. As the King of Beaver slowly turned about the circle, he encountered this rebel defying his assumption, and paused in his speaking a full minute, the drowsy farmers seeing merely that notes were being shifted and rearranged on the table. Then he began again, the dictatorial key transposed into melody. His covert message was to the new maid in the congregation. She might struggle like a fly in a web. He wrapped her around and around with beautiful sentences. As speaker of the state legislature, he had learned well how to handle men in the mass, but nature had doubly endowed him for entrancing women. The spiritual part of James Strang, king and prophet of a peculiar sect, appealed to the one best calculated to appreciate him during the remainder of his exhortation. The tabernacle, to which Beaver Island Mormons gathered every Saturday instead of every Sunday, was yet unfinished. Its circular shape and vaulted ceiling, paneled in the hard woods of the island, had been planned by the man who stood in the center. Many openings under the eaves gaped windowless, but the congregation, sheltered from a July sun, enjoyed freely the lake air, bringing fragrance from their own fields and gardens. They seemed a bovine, honest people, in homespun and hickory, and youth, bright-eyed and fresh-cheeked, was not lacking. They sat on benches arranged in circles around a central platform which held the prophet's chair and table. This was his simple plan for making his world revolve around him. Roxy Cheeseman, Emmeline's cousin, was stirred to restlessness by the prophet's unusual manner, and shifted uneasily on the bench. Her short, scarlet-cheeked face made her a favorite among the young men. She had besides this attraction a small waist and foot, and a father who was very well off indeed for a Beaver Island farmer. Roxy's black eyes, with the round and unwinking stare of a bird's, were fixed on King Strang, as if she instinctively warded off a gaze which by swerving a little could smite her. But the prophet paid no attention to anyone when the meeting was over, his custom being to crush his notes in one hand at the end of his peroration, and to retire like a priest, leaving the dispersing congregation awed by his rapt face. The two cousins walked sedately along the street of St. James Village, while their elders lingered about the tabernacle door shaking hands. That primitive settlement of the early 50s consisted of a few houses and log stores, a mill, the tabernacle, and long docks, at which steamers touched perhaps once a week. The forest partially encircled it. A few Gentiles, making Saturday purchases in a shop kept by one of their own kind, glanced with dislike at the separating Mormons. The shouts of Gentile children could also be heard at Saturday play. Otherwise, a Sabbath peacefulness was over the landscape. Beaver Island had not a rugged coastline, though the harbor of St. James was deep and good. Land rose from it in gentle undulations rather than hills. Emmeline and Roxy walked inland, with their backs to the harbor. In summer, farmers who lived nearest St. James took shortcuts through the woods to meeting, and let their horses rest. The last house on the street was a wooden building of some pretension, having bow windows and a veranda. High pickets enclosed a secluded garden. It was very unlike the log cabins of the island. "He lives here," said Roxy. Emmeline did not inquire who lived here. She understood, and her question was, "How many with him?" "All of them, 8. 7 of them stay at home, but Mary French travels with him. Didn't you notice her in the tabernacle, the girl with the rose in her hair, sitting near the platform?" "Yes, I noticed her. Was that one of his wives?" Roxy waited until they had struck into the woods path, and then looked guardedly behind her. "Mary French is the youngest one. She was sealed to the prophet only 2 years ago, and last winter she went traveling with him, and we heard she dressed in men's clothes and acted as his secretary." "But why did she do that when she was his wife according to your religion?" "I don't know," responded Roxy, mysteriously. The Gentiles on the mainland are very hard on us. They follow the track between fragrant grapevine and hickory, and the girl bred to respect polygamy inquired. Do you feel afraid of the prophet, Cousin Emmeline?
No, I don't, retorted the girl bred to abhor it.
Sometimes I do. He makes people do just what he wants them to. Mary French was a Gentile's daughter, the proudest girl that ever stepped in St. James. She didn't live on the island, she came here to visit. And he got her.
What's the matter, Cousin Emmeline?
Someone trod on my grave, I shivered. Cousin Roxy, I want to ask you a plain question. Do you like a man's having more than one wife?
No, I don't.
And father doesn't either. But he was obliged to marry again, or get into trouble with the other elders. And Aunt Mahala is very good about the house, and mine's mother. The revelation may be plain enough, but I am not the kind of a girl, declared Roxy, daringly, as one might blaspheme, that cares a straw for the revelation. Emmeline took hold of her arm, and they walked on with a new sense of companionship. A great many of the people feel the same way about it. But when the prophet makes them understand it as part of the faith, they have to keep the faith. I am a reprobate myself. But don't tell father, appealed Roxy, uneasily. He is an elder.
My Uncle Cheeseman is a good man, said Emmeline, finding comfort in this fact. She could not explain to her cousin how hard it had been for her to come to Beaver Island to live among Mormons.
Her uncle had insisted on giving his orphan niece a home in the protection of a male relative, at the death of the maiden aunt by whom she had been brought up. In that day no girl thought of living without protection. Emmeline had a few thousand dollars of her own, but her money was invested, and he could not count on the use of it, which men assumed a right to have when helpless women clustered to their hearths. Her Uncle Cheeseman was undeniably a good man, whatever might be said of his religious faith.
I like father myself, assented Roxy. He is never strict with us unless the prophet has some revelation that makes him so.
Cousin Emmeline, I hope you won't grow to be taken up with Brother Strang, like Mary French. I thought he looked at you today. Emmeline's face and neck were scarlet above her black dress. The Gentile resented as an insult what the Mormon simply foreboded as distasteful to herself, though there was not a family of that faith on the island who would not have felt honored in giving a daughter to the prophet.
I hate him! Exclaimed Emmeline, her virgin rage mingled with a kind of sweet and sickening pain. I'll never go to his church again.
Father wouldn't like that, Cousin Emmeline, observed Roxy, though her heart leapt to such unshackled freedom. He says we mustn't put our hand to the plow and turn back. Everybody knows that Brother Strang is the only person who can keep the Gentiles from driving us off the island. They have persecuted us ever since the settlement was made. But they are afraid of him. They cannot do anything with him. As long as he lives, he is better than an army to keep our lands and homes for us.
You are in a hard case betwixt Gentiles and prophet, laughed Emmeline.
Yet the aspects of life on Beaver Island keenly interested her. This small world, 15 miles in length by 6 in breadth, was shut off by itself in Lake Michigan, remote from the civilization of towns. She liked at first to feel cut loose from her past life, and would have had the steamers touch less often at St. James, diminishing their chances of bringing her hateful news. There were only two roads on the island, one extending from the harbor town in the north end to a village called Galilee at the extreme southeast end, the other to the southwest shore. Along these roads farms were laid out, each about 80 rods in width.